Welcome. We are live on the air for our first recording. This is the Raw Retrospective, part of the Monday Night War podcast series. Find us at MondayNightWar.com. I am at Wrestling Savant on Twitter. That is also my Squared Circle subreddit handle. Go to MondayNightWar.com for the full experience that the Monday Night War podcast series offers. There you can connect with the show's Twitter and Facebook page, as well as our RSS feed. The Monday Night War podcast series is available using any device, iPhone, iPad, Android, smartphones, tablets, desktop computers, and laptops. Just plug the link to our feed into your preferred method of subscribing, downloading, and listening to podcasts. Now, let's set the table. With the miracle that is the WWE Network, we can now relive the glory of both Monday Night Raw and WCW Monday Nitro. As a companion to these broadcasts, I, along with my cast of friends, will walk you through time through the lens of 2015 and some lifelong fans that were there watching it then and still watch today. It'll be a blast. I promise to give you plenty of insight along the way, and everyone on this broadcast is good for a laugh now and again. So, watching along is optional. Just hang on and enjoy the ride. With that out of the way, let's get started. My guest today can be found on Twitter at Flawless Brian. Brian, thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for the invite. I've been off my meds all week in preparation for this.
Have you? Well, that's good to know. Are you ready for this? It's going to be a little bit of fun here.
I'm ready, man. Let's rock.
The show's opening, as long as you're along with me, with the scene outside the Manhattan Center, and Sean Mooney's introducing the viewing audience to the debut episode of Monday Night Raw. And so for some context here, for those of us that weren't around as wrestling fans in 1993, or perhaps are too far removed from it to remember, the week prior to this was the last episode of Primetime Wrestling, which was a long-running television broadcast that WWF presented, airing in the same time slot on USA each Monday evening, consisting of a combination of in-studio shenanigans and in-ring footage from earlier tapings across whatever cities that WWF had been touring. Bobby Heenan's interrupting Sean Mooney here as he tries to make his way into the venue. The running gag here is that Bobby was not informed that he was left off the Monday Night Raw commentary team, and he was going to do anything to get inside. So Bobby and Vince McMahon had been the hosts of the aforementioned Primetime Wrestling show. Just to get everybody caught up to speed, here is a clip.
We are live from the streets of a chilly New York City, but it is about to get very hot here in Manhattan. Hello, everyone. I'm Sean Mooney. A few minutes ago, it was a mob scene out here, everyone braving the elements to be a part of Monday Night Raw. But now they're inside, set for the action. Hey, wait a minute.
What?
Bobby Heenan.
I'm going in there.
No.
Yes, I am.
You were replaced.
I was replaced?
Yes.
By who would replace me?
Rob Bartlett. You're not
supposed to be in there. I don't care about Rob Bartlett. This is Monday Night Raw, live from New York City.
That's
and
right.
I've got to be in there to host
no,
it.
No, you're not.
No, what do you mean,
you
no,
can't get in. I'm sorry.
What do you mean, I can't get in? I can get in. I can buy a ticket.
No, there are no tickets left. It's sold out in there. They're jammed to the rafters.
Well, then show me the press gate so I can get through here.
I didn't make up the rules here. I didn't
know
anything about
it. What do you mean?
So there's a little bit of the Monday Night Raw theme, Brian, an introduction video, which itself was different from what WWF shows were known for prior. If you recall, this one was a little darker in color scheme and used some creative editing to showcase WWF superstars in negative imagery. What do you recall, Brian, from your old like WWF superstars and Spotlight, all of those shows that we used to watch, All American Wrestling back in the day? What was the things that stood out to you that were different about this opening?
Oh, man. I mean, I loved the intimate setting, much smaller arena. You know, and if you notice, and look out into the crowd there, and we see a shot of the mezzanine. There's actually separate chairs that are kind of like those gold frame chairs, right, with a little leather seat that you usually see at, like, you know, convention halls, or, you know, you go to weddings, hit receptions and stuff like that. Not really any form of stadium seating. For the first time ever, I think we were seeing non- You know, my father used to call them schlum dunks, you know, I've heard the term jabronis and, you know, jobbers. But this was actually superstars versus superstars. So right off the bat, you know, your first match, you're like, wow, I don't see, you know, Iron Mike Sharp in there or, you know, Barry Horowitz or any of your favorites. So right off the bat, it was like, you know, matchups that you, you know, could only catch on pay-per-views, smaller venue. Like you said, the graphics, lack of kind of jazz music, right, intros and more rock and roll, you know.
Yeah, we're going to get our fair share of those schlub dubs that your dad used to refer to them as the weeks go on. I'm looking at the episode guide here, but it was quite noticeable at the time when every other WWF show opened with these bright colors, usually
right.
Fluorescent, quick action cuts, perhaps some lasers. I remember right. There was a show where during the Warriors' reign as champion, he actually opened the show with lasers shooting out of his eyes. And it was usually set to music pretty heavy on the saxophone, so there's that jazz for some reason. It must have been, I don't know, maybe Vince was a jazz fan, but...
it was a New York thing.
Yeah, I mean, this theme even had a touch of jazz in before they cut to Inside the Manhattan Center to the sound of that familiar police siren.
Right,
so
right.
The benefit of having Vince on hand as the owner of the company, although not common knowledge at the time, is... As lead commentator, you can hear how proud he is of this venture into live programming from, you know, deep in the heart of New York City. It's right there in his boisterous welcome. So we get our first glimpse of the new Raw announced team. Vince McMahon, Randy Macho Man Savage, and Rob Bartlett. Yeah. What do you know about Rob Bartlett?
That you just said it.
Well,
that's it.
I'm going to rely on Wikipedia to inform the masses here. So Rob Bartlett is an American comedian, actor, impressionist, and writer who gained widespread fame on the radio show Imus in the Morning. Vince wanted to have a tie-in with New York City and felt like bringing in someone the likes of Bartlett was a net positive for them at this time, as the shock jock era was in its early stages on a national level. So you're familiar with Imus, I guess, or
Stern. More so Stern, but Imus was kind of, you know, around at the same time, right?
Yeah, and Imus is actually still around, yeah. One long-running recurring character, according to Wikipedia, that Bartlett performed on this morning show was named Blind Mississippi White Boy Pig Feet Dupree, who is an old blues musician from Louisiana. So you get... an immediate taste for Bartlett's specific brand of humor, whether you wanted to or not, into this first foray into commentating on a live wrestling broadcast. The good news is this does not last long, and he's actually gone by April. So
he left his mark, though. He got enough lines in, you know.
Yeah, and it's funny to hear him make references that you typically would not hear on a WWF broadcast,
right.
You know, like the topical references. They usually, I don't know if I would say shied away from it, but I just don't think that Vince was too in tune with pop culture, so it just wasn't it wasn't common.
No, definitely. I mean, a lot of Foucault references and you know, bringing up actors and people outside of the world of the WWE. You know, usually commentary was revolving around the WWE universe, as it was not called back then, but it pretty much exists in a vacuum, you know. Like Stephanie McMahon has said, they compete against any other form of entertainment, and they really weren't one to give plugs or comment on current happenings.
No, look at this Coco Beware entering as to what most will call or recall as Owen Hart's theme music. Coco is still holding on to it after the breakup of their short-lived tag team of High Energy. Bartlett refers to him as Gary Coleman.
Which kind of surprises Vince, right? He does his... You'll hear him say, well, I wouldn't imagine. Or, you know, he has typical kind of blow-off comments like that. But, yeah, Gary Coleman, all grown up. And I'm thinking, can he possibly grow up? I mean, he was already kind of grown. And
wasn't he 40 when they filmed Different Strokes? Maybe we're dating ourselves at this point.
He ain't grown yet, you know.
Yoko gets the full geisha entrance with flowers and everything, wearing the red... on white rare variant. What is your favorite Yokozuna color combination? Because he sported a few.
He did. I always, I recall him always, you know, when I think of him as with the red tights with the black trim, you know, but the white definitely, you know, I don't know if you can make him look bigger, right? But white obviously makes somebody look bigger as opposed to black and whatnot. And it kind of showed off the cellulite, right? That cottage cheese. For the camera guy would love to swoop in there and do an undercarriage kind of shot, right? When he was doing his sumo pose.
Yeah, I'm sure they practiced that.
I'm sure. And I like the white with the red. I'd seen him white with black, pretty rare, but you've got to honor the colors of Japan, which, by the way, he was not Japanese, but, you know, the character. And so I liked the white, the rare white trunks with the red trim.
Yeah, and the white with black trim is actually what he sports on Royal Rumble, if I remember correctly, in 1993, which is what this episode of Raw is building to. This match actually is a setup for about 30 horrible Bartlett jokes.
Right. All involving Asians and, you know.
Yeah, Orientals, as he calls them, which is, you know, it's a super offensive. So.
Exactly.
That high top is magnificent on Coco. Some question the participants in the opening match of their new flagship program. But at this point in time, having a match between two superstars, as you mentioned earlier, was unheard of. So this was a big deal. You know, you have to just think about this moment in time. So as they were building to the 1993 Royal Rumble, and spoiler alert, 20 years later, Yokozuna wins. They were showcasing his relatively new act right at the top of the broadcast. So I get it. Right after this match, a pretty simple Royal Rumble commercial airs before we're back to ringside. We're going to bring you right to what we're listening to right now with a clip, and we'll be right back.
On January 24th, the crowd will shake. The earth will rumble. The Royal Rumble. 30 superstar wrestlers of the WWF bang heads in a winner-take-all rumble. 30 wrestlers, one ring. Something's got to give. And in a championship match, Bret the Hitman Hart puts his title on the line when he battles the ruthless Razor Ramon. The Royal Rumble, live Sunday, January 24th on pay-per-view.
I miss commercials like that, I must say. After that, Vince throws to a pre-taped studio recording of Bobby Heenan hyping the unveiling of Narcissist, which is definitely a Vince pronunciation. The Narcissist is actually Lex Luger, who will be unveiled at the Royal Rumble. And look at that deep V on Bobby Heenan.
With sequins.
Narcissist, again, Lex Luger, who has been out of the ring for over a year after leaving WCW and working through a no-compete clause. After losing to Sting at WCW Super Brawl in 1992, which you can also see on the WWE Network, Luger negotiated a departure from WCW and joined Vince McMahon's then World Bodybuilding Federation, appearing regularly as co-host on its Saturday morning program, Body Stars. He also made an appearance at WrestleMania 8, if you recall, taking part in an on-air interview with Bobby Heenan and Gorilla Monsoon. Heenan and Luger formed an alliance in the WBF similar to Heenan's alliance with Ric Flair in the WWF. He was slated to pose at a WBF pay-per-view event, but was injured in a motorcycle accident that becomes part of his wrestling gimmick later. By the time he recovered, the WBF was out of business. Let's throw to Bobby. Yeah, not a moment too soon. And let's hear what he has to say about the impending debut of Narcissist.
Hey, Mr. Perfect. I heard you're asking questions of the other wrestlers. Hey, who is this guy, Narcissist? What do you know about him? Is he truly beyond perfect? Is it possible for anyone to have those qualities superior to mine? Well, let me answer your questions, Mr. Perfect. Comparing you to Narcissus would be like comparing ice cream to horse manure. Now, I know horse manure has its place in this world, even perfect horse manure. But perfect, there is only room in this world for one human being that is truly anatomically perfect, that is physically and mentally superior beyond imagination. Why, Ric Flair and I both agree that Michelangelo could not capture on canvas the stupendous qualities of Narcissus. He could not sculpt from marble the metamorphic qualities of Narcissus. Why, Narcissus is so beyond perfect, it's like he's from another galaxy. So, Mr. Perfect, when you see me unveil Narcissus at the Royal Rumble, you are going to think, if you can, that Narcissus is from another world.
Gosh, I don't know if there's anyone that will ever be as good as Bobby the Brain Heenan. That was some good stuff. Speaking of former WCW alumni up to this point, the Steiner brothers face the masked executioners, and the Steiners basically maul these guys. I'm watching it right now.
I love it. It's, you know, no collar and elbow tie-ups, no go-behind, side headlocks, just nothing but power moves. And, I mean, look how big Rick Steiner was back then, right? It seemed like he kind of got smaller over the years, and his muscle mass kind of went to Scott, you know?
Yeah, I don't know how that works within a family, but that definitely is the case. Doink the Clown is shown causing a ruckus in the crowd as Rob Bartlett fudges his name to the point that Vince also starts to refer to him as Dork before correcting himself. The Steiners were a big fish in the NWA and later WCW before signing with the WWF. They're an example of WWF not exactly having the golden touch. When you make that jump, they never gave the Steiners, in my opinion, that WWF overhaul with any discernible characteristics or traits. That music is terrible. One thing I noticed watching this episode back is that Vince slips in a quick mention of Mitch Ferratt during this match, who is a Buffalo Bills offensive lineman joining the WWF, which never even came to be.
Nope, and I mean, I'm a Buffalo Bills fan. I'm from Buffalo, and I think he's related to Gus Ferratt, actually, the old quarterback that played for Detroit there and whatnot. But I did catch that. I don't know if he was a leftover from that that WrestleMania 2 NFL and Superstars Royal Rumble, but they hyped him. I wish I could remember him.
Yeah, very strange. During that match, we heard, "What a maneuver," from Vince McMahon, so we should start keeping count, I guess, since this is first episode. So the count is at one. Bobby the Brain Heenan, dressed in drag, still trying to get inside. This is pretty funny stuff. I've got a clip queued up, so let's play that, and we will be right back with you.
Yes, Vince, I'm not quite sure what is going on. Apparently, a security guard has detained a woman here. Excuse me, sir. What seems to be the problem here?
Your nephew? I'm supposed to see him, yes.
Rob Bartlett's
aunt? Yes, I'm his aunt. He's my nephew. He's my, well, yes. I have to go in there and see him right now.
I'm sure we can straighten this all out. We could probably go into the will call.
Wait. I'm going in there right now.
Wait a minute. Bobby Heenan.
Give me that.
I thought I'd seen everything here in the World Wrestling Federation, but the brain in drag.
I gotta get in there.
This is ridiculous. I can't believe you.
I'll give you the earrings and everything if you want.
Stop.
Let me in. Will you let me in? I'll give you $50 to do it. I gotta be in there. This is wrong.
Can you ever fault anybody for playing it too straight? Because Sean Mooney's like, Bobby Heenan. Like, he's just astonished that he would steep so low in order to try and get in. It's pretty funny stuff.
You can never overact in wrestling.
Yeah, and actually that segues perfectly. Now we're back with Raw in the ring. Vince McMahon holding a microphone to Razor Ramon, looking like $1 million. He is all in at this point.
He is. He's like gimmick. Straight out of a Color Me Bad video or something.
Yeah,
not for those guys.
All for love. If you're unaware, Razor blasted onto the WWF scene with this gimmick and was immediately placed in main events. He teamed with Ric Flair to face Savage and what was supposed to be the Ultimate Warrior at Survivor Series just prior to this. Mr. Perfect ended up teaming with Savage after all that night. Now Razor is the number one contender for the WWF Championship at the Royal Rumble. He will face Bret Hart. I absolutely love Razor. What was your take on Scott Hall's introduction of this character to the WWF?
Man, at first, you know, you didn't know how to take him, right? The accent, where'd that come from, right? If you were familiar with him teaming with Kurt Hennig and whatnot. And the vignettes were kind of so hokey that they actually became cool, right? And the flick and the toothpick and threatening the waiter and, you know, at the outside cabana or wherever he was at. And as far as an athlete goes, I mean, great skills, 6'7", could move. He had that nice power move with the fall-away slam and whatnot. So could take superplexes, would do anything that you'd ask him to. And really, I think he was kind of maybe the first bad guy that fans could get behind, right, and kind of played to the crowd and wasn't a straight-up heel. But he was definitely cool, man. He was cooler than the Scott Hall character of Big Scott Hall.
Definitely. I couldn't have said it better myself. What do you think about this gimmick basically being that of a cocaine dealer, though? I mean, complete with giant foam razors for sale at the merchandise stand.
Right. And I mean, you know, so not to date myself, but I mean, I was about 20 when this Raw debuted. And I can recall Razor. I mean, I never saw Scarface. To this day, I have not seen Scarface. I've heard people do the impressions, you know, with the flower on their faces and say hello to my little friend and all that. I mean, I never got that. I just said, well, he's this refugee from Cuba or whatever. He's a self-made man. And, you know, the Razor thing was just kind of like he was dangerous. You know, I never got that. But if you look at it, the shirt he's wearing in this promo and the gold chains and whatnot, nowadays, of course, it would scream Cokehead. But at the time, I really hadn't met any characters quite like Razor.
Yeah, that's a great explanation, too. And actually, that's right in line with now present-day Scott Hall talking about how he proposed the idea of that character to Vince McMahon, because Vince had also never seen Scarface. So this is a complete take off of that, and Vince just thought it was great, and they ran with it. As Randy Savage talks about their next stop on the Headlock on Hunger tour with some brief words from Tatanka, let's take this opportunity for a short break. We will be back before you know it.
Do you need a custom banner or logo for your Facebook, website, or blog? Or how about a video filmed and edited for your next project? Visit editahit.com for all things editing. We're dedicated to giving you the very best of video and photo editing services with a focus on quality, communication, and affordability. We are willing to work directly with you over the phone today to ensure your next project is a hit at editahit.com.
You are listening to the Raw Retrospective, brought to you by the Monday Night War podcast series at mondaynightwar.com. Good stuff. We are back, and it's time for a classic wrestle crap character in Max Moon. Do you know what this character was named before settling on Max Moon?
I have no idea. I'd known him as Max Moon, but I think it was something about, you know, the Acrobat Kid or Starman, I think. But Nintendo kind of had a lock on that name.
Well, you're close. At first, when Max Moon had debuted on WWF Superstars, he was the Comet Kid. Then Maximilian Moves before hitting the big time, Monday Night Raw, debut telecast. Those names are long forgotten because they only occurred on those single episodes of those other TV shows. I have a lot of info on the concept of Max Moon. Originally, it was played by the one and only Conan, K-Dog. And you can search on the internet for the one photo that I believe exists with Conan actually in this gear. Conan has gone on record since, even very recently, stating that Vince and company rolled out the red carpet for him when he was a megastar in Mexico. At this time, he was starring on a Mexican soap opera. What are those called, Brian?
I don't know, but they're on Telemundo or now the El Rey Network.
Yeah, well, the Max Moon mask is identical to the one that he had been wearing up to this point in Mexico. When conceptualizing the character, Vince wanted Moon to project from the floor to the ring apron using a jetpack that would be able to lift him in much the same way Brock Lesnar just does naturally with his, you know, leaping vertical. Conan said that he was dead on arrival because Vince spent $13,000 on the suit that you can see shooting fireworks and streamers from the arms here in the Manhattan Center. Apparently, the other WWF superstars, as you can imagine, were not pleased with this investment in an outsider. And rather than let the suit go to waste, they put it on a journeyman by the name of Paul Diamond, who is wrestling Shawn Michaels here. Diamond would also be known as Kato from the Orient Express prior to this. Or if you go way back to the mid-80s, the American breed in Texas with a young Shawn Michaels, which is likely why these two churned out the best match of the night, not that there was stiff competition.
Definitely not. And in fact, that makes sense, right? Everything in wrestling kind of comes full circle. And, you know, Shawn Michaels and Max Moon here. Now, you know, who of course, we'll probably investigate this in future editions of Raw, but I recall the 1-2-3 Kid, Lightning Kid, Cannonball Kid having several names before they settled. I think Max Moon is right up there, though, with guys that have had, you know, different several different names over the course of a couple weeks. So
yeah,
he's a rare breed.
I was thinking of that, too, when I was going through this list of names prior to them settling upon Max Moon, so I'm glad that you mentioned it. Speaking of someone with many monikers, at this point, Shawn Michaels is about a year into his Heartbreak Kid character, with not a ton of heat, but definitely viewed as a star since he's the only one carrying any gold on this broadcast. This is the best match of the night, not surprising coming from one Shawn Michaels, who was a workhorse even at this point in his career.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I could probably have a good match with the guy.
We are treated to a promo for WWF Mania, which is a new Saturday morning program on USA after the Shawn Michaels-Max Moon match. Do you remember when I mentioned the feel of WWF programming prior to Monday Night War becoming a thing?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, this is a perfect example. So I'm going to cue up this commercial, and we'll be right back.
Ah, it's Saturday morning. You just can't seem to get out of bed.
Wake up!
Now, there's an exciting new reason to rise and shine. WWF Mania. The whole family will love our stunning superstars, candid interviews, and, of course, tons of great wrestling action. WWF Mania, more jolting than a cup of coffee, and it's 100% caffeine-free.
Those sound effects are insanity. So here we got a plug for the main event of this evening's telecast, Damian Demento versus The Undertaker. Looking forward to that.
Hey, how about that Intercontinental title, by the way, that Shawn Michaels had, that strange, it wasn't even a teal, it was like a dull robin's egg blue. I don't think I've ever seen that version of the IC title.
Yeah, he had quite a few of them, and I think that particular belt was to match like one outfit that he had, but he continued to wear the belt. This is an odd face promo right now by a smiling Mr. Perfect. That's a guy who should have never made the switch from a heel. Are you watching this?
Yeah, I mean, it's. I remember at the time, I think they turned him only because, like you said, that Ultimate Warrior match and whatever happened, and I think that was when he had his falling out with the company. But they had turned him face, and I believe he'd feuded with Ric Flair for a while and had teamed with Macho Man Randy Savage. And they kind of dropped the whole Mr. Perfect thing, right? He wasn't, you know, throwing strikes and shooting three-pointers. And all of a sudden, this arrogant attitude that he had went away, and he's smiling. And it just seemed like he like you said, with the Steiners, right, where they didn't give him any kind of discernible characteristics, right, or personality. He was just a plain old guy in a yellow singlet, you know, that smiled a lot and had the Jerry curl.
Yeah, it's too bad. I mean, that guy was just a killer heel. I love how the graphics and the screen rumble for the Royal Rumble. It's almost as if Vince was like, we needed to rumble.
Very literal. Yes. Vince can never be accused for not being too literal.
No, Carlos Colon.
Tenryu, I'll tell you, like, I remember those guys, Tenryu, Carlos Colon, and I remember that rumble. And I think from about the third Royal Rumble on, my friends and I were always very skeptical, right? We were like, how is Vince going to screw us this year, you know? And this was before the Bret Hart screw job. But there was always, like, you know, the countdown would happen. They maybe wouldn't play a guy's music. This guy must have got jumped in the back, you know, and they'd skip. So my friends and I would actually count. We would record on a piece of paper here. We would eat Little Caesar's pizza, and we would wrestle in the living room. Kids, don't try that at home. And we would record, you know, to make sure that Vince didn't jip us 30 wrestlers. And you'd always have somebody that one year, right, Mankind, Dude Love, Cactus Jack, way later on. But at this point, the famous, oh, this guy got jumped in the back, Or, hey, here's Carlos Colon, or, you know, who had no presence in the WWE universe at all up till that point. And he shows up and you know, you're like, who are these guys? And we felt kind of gypped, you know?
Yeah, I mean, no one cared about Carlos Colon at that point, 1993, that was also watching the WWF. So very interesting, to say the least. Also, guys did not pull double duty back then at the Royal Rumble, so the thin roster definitely shines through here, as you stated, as you're trying to keep tally. Here we are. Sean Mooney is back on our screen, and this time he is with Rob Bartlett's Uncle Morty, who, as you might have guessed, turns out to be Bobby the Brain Heenan. This time, Bobby has an idea. So don't take my word for it. We're going to play a clip and be right back with you.
There is no more room inside, but the word is out. These folks are lining up to get tickets for next week's Monday Night WWF Raw. I just want to ask you a question. Are you getting your tickets for next week?
I got to get in line
here. Get in line?
Yes, I got to get inside there. I got to see him.
Fuck. What's the problem?
I got to see my nephew. His name is Ron Bartlett.
You have a relation.
Yes, I'm Uncle Morty Feldman. He needs me inside. I got to go now.
I ran into your
inside.
Wife earlier. Wait a minute. No.
I've got to go inside.
What are you talking about?
I have to. He's got the tickets for me for tonight for the Raw on discount. He's got the discount. He's a good bagel. He's a good boy.
Wait a minute. Uncle Morty, you seem to be having a little problem here with your beard. Bobby Heenan.
Okay, you know. I got to get inside.
Well, I'll go
to anyways. I got to get inside. I got to get in there. I got to know. Please, you understand. I got to get the roof. Fiddler, the roof. The roof. There's got to be a way in on the roof.
See, there was this thread throughout the entire episode, and we're about to reach the final curtain call, so to speak, for Bobby Heenan. Now, as Vince and company trip over their uncooked, uncut, and uncensored tagline, you will certainly get your fill of that soon. We get a clip of Kamala being rescued from the likes of Kimchi and Harvey Whippleman by the Reverend Slick. While this unfolds, we are going to take a brief break on behalf of one of our sponsors.
SquadRatCurler.com specializes in shirts for gym rats, gamers, wrestling fans, and more. If you want to style and profile,
get your curl on.
If you want to survive the danger zone,
get your curl on.
If you want the most elite custom-made tees and tanks in the world today, you gotta get your curl on at SquadRatCurler.com.
Ooh, yeah, buy a shirt, dig it.
And we are back. It is time for our main event, ladies and gentlemen. From the outer reaches of your mind, Damian Demento is already in the ring as The Undertaker makes his entrance. Not much to this match, but again, it is billed as two WWF superstars going at it, which is specifically mentioned by the Macho Man during the contest. Basically a showcase for one of the WWF's main attractions. So let's talk about that, Brian. Back at this point, you did not get to see two showcase wrestlers. And I don't care what people think about Damian Demento. The fact that he was a gimmick within the WWF makes him one of their superstars. So up to this point, if you were watching one of their broadcasts, be it Primetime Wrestling, WWF Superstars, All-American Wrestling, whatever the case may be, it was typically a superstar versus enhancement talent. Correct? Unless you had a special event like, say, Saturday night's main event. So what are your thoughts on this?
Right, exactly. The only match that I remember ever taking place between two superstars, and it was a world title match, and it was the only time that in my mind, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, I'm sure the internet, you know, dudes out there, right, the super fans will correct me or not, but I specifically remember it was like July 4th weekend, and Hulk Hogan put the title on the line against Bob Orton. And it was like this humongous Bob Orton Jr., Randy Orton's dad, I remember it just being this huge event. And that was probably the only time that superstars had any kind of superstar versus superstar matchup. Unless, like you said, main event, Saturday night's main event, which I absolutely loved. And back in the day, right, you had the TV guide that would come out. You didn't have guides, the internet, guides on your TV. No smart TVs. They were all dumb TVs. I would get the Sunday paper. I'd tear through it and get the TV guide for that week, right? And I'd flip to the Saturday, which was the furthest day possible from that. that issue date. And I would jump to Saturday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern time to see if Saturday night's main event was going to be on. And I was always so bummed out, just crushed, when I would see Saturday Night Live, especially if it was a rerun. And I'd be like, man, it's a rerun. They could be having Saturday night's main event. And I'd stay up all night and just drink a bunch of caffeine and go crazy. Speaking of that, Jeremy, of course, Mountain Dew, always my choice of drink. What's your favorite flavor Mountain Dew now that we're in the 2015s? There's tons to pick from. What's your favorite?
Well, you know, I don't drink soda, so I will preface it by saying that. However, Code Red.
Respectable. Respectable choice.
There's something about traditional Mountain Dew that leaves kind of, I don't want to say an aftertaste, but almost like a film behind in my mouth, and it could all just be psychological, but
no, that's the best part. Are you kidding?
It just tastes like something that I should be cleaning metal with and not ingesting and putting into my body. And the fact that it glows, wow, I can't believe how much of that I ingested leading up, you know, maybe for the first 20 years of my life. But yeah, I gave up soda quite a while ago.
That's how I'm still keeping my body mass. That's one of the secrets.
Yeah, I mean, I just traded it off for, you know, beer and Jack Daniels. So
right.
I will say this, as we're watching this match play out, I noticed Vladimir the Super Fan. So I think this is also a good opportunity, along with the Vince McMahon What a Maneuver count, to say that any Vladimir the Super Fan sighting is going to gain 1 point on the board. I'll keep count of just how many shows he is present for. And he's put one on the board right out of the gate. Do you know who I'm referring to?
No, I mean, I've seen his name, and I know that he's one of the recognized super fans as far as, you know, internet hits and, right, he's at all the shows. I think he wears glasses. I think that was him in the front row.
Yep.
Wearing some kind of white Ico Pro sweater, but it's in the 90s, the tortoiseshell glasses, all these dudes kind of look the same. Was that him? Did I spot him?
You did, yeah. Yeah, he's kind of that orange colored gentleman that has the shorter fade hair. You've got those glasses that you mentioned, and of course, you know, he's wearing a turtleneck, so kind of hard to miss, but he will make his presence known throughout most of the shows that we will review here on the Monday Night War podcast series, and that goes for both Raw, I believe he's local here to the Manhattan Center, and Monday Nitro, because he was not exclusive to the WWF. If you go to MondayNightWar.com, you will see some of us meeting Vladimir the Superfan during WrestleMania Access in Miami at WrestleMania 28. It was a dream come true.
Yeah, I mean, I'd never made it to a WWE WrestleMania, but I know Access. I always loved, you know, they had the little entrances. You could come down the little ring and, you know, have some music playing. And I know sometimes you could record commentary with some of the guys there and look at some of the ring gear. And, of course, meet the super fans. I think there's always a couple of those characters that you see even Monday Night Raw last week. Right. And some of these events, Philly, certain places, the dude that looks like Jim Martin from Faith No More. Right. Red glasses or round glasses, big beard.
Affectionately known as Faith No More guy.
Is he? Nice. I called it. And, you know, there's a couple dudes that you'll recognize. There's a guy with like a beard and long hair, wears like a red hat. These guys are always on like the main camera. So if you're like me with the HD TV and you like to look at the fans, you don't see as many signs nowadays as you used to, or at least the signs aren't made on these big, huge neon poster board, right? But the next time you check out a Raw or a pay-per-view, if you start looking at those fans in the front row, and especially when the action spills out to the floor, it's scary how many of these people you see recurringly. And you're probably going to be filled with jealousy. You know, how do they get these tickets? So that's one of the perks of being a super fan, I guess.
So as we go off the air here, Vince McMahon catches up with Doink, who he stopped referring to as Dork, and at ringside warning him not to make children cry. Matt Bourne had been playing this heel Doink character to perfection at this point, basically stating that if they cry, it wasn't his problem as long as he gets a laugh out of it. If you would have told me that there was going to be a wrestling clown, I would have scoffed at it even at the age of 12. However, this lays the groundwork for his confrontation with fluorescent orange Kona Crush. We can just call him Orange Crush. That carries itself over the course of far too many months. But Matt Bourne is supremely underrated in the very first incarnation of Doink. But soon thereafter, they take him into a different direction. But he was freaky, man.
He was, and that was how Doink debuted, right? He was bad at first.
Everybody hates
clowns, right? And, I remember, and actually, like you said, if somebody had told you at your young, tender age that, you know, there'd be a wrestling clown, you wouldn't have believed it. But I can recall the Pro Wrestling Illustrated, right, and stuff, and things, publications like that, that when Doink debuted, they'd kind of been like, man, this is it. This is the sign of the apocalypse. All wrestling's done. You know, Vince has taken it too far, you know, because they'd always kind of got on him about the colorful outfits and the ridiculous theatrics. And now you literally have a wrestling clown. It was foreseen by a lot of people in the biz as what would mark the end of the world. And somebody must have told Vince that. Good idea, you know, and here he is. And Doink will always kind of live on in my heart and my heart of hearts. I have a fondness for WrestleCrap. Max Moon, Damian Demento, and Doink, all on the same, the premiere of their flagship program. It's a big moment for those guys.
Yeah, now speaking of Orange Crush, he comes out to address Doink, and let's just say that speaking is not Crush's strong suit. A chase around the ring ensues before Doink falls on his back laughing, which is what I was about to do after Bryan Adams' promo.
Running isn't his strong suit either. I think at like two different points, he actually stopped even moving forward, like maybe thinking Doink had stopped. And then he gingerly tiptoes around the steps there. So I don't know what was going on with his boots or what's going on, but definitely, I don't know what the heck is his strong suit. I mean, I guess he's strong, right? He's got that raw power. Ico Pro flows through his veins.
Lots of gimmicks in that guy's career, but yeah, you saw like a Wile E. Coyote Roadrunner routine there. Then they faded to black inside the arena with Doink on his back. We are then taken outside, this time to the roof, for the conclusion of Bobby Heenan's quest to gain entry inside the Manhattan Center. And here is a clip.
Well, as you know, Bobby Heenan has been very persistent throughout the evening attempting to get inside. Well, I've got some good news for him. Excuse me, Bobby.
What?
Bobby Heenan.
I
know. I just got word. I just got word. You can go on up. You're welcome. Go. Yes, you're on the way. No, let him go. Let him go. Have a good time up there, Bobby.
This show is definitely a mile marker for the WWF as they put the wheels in motion for a weekly, sometimes live, sometimes taped event that does become their flagship program and is still rolling on to this day. So we got one decent match with who else but HBK, Old Faithful. Three of our favorites on the broadcast, Savage, Shawn Michaels, and Razor, so it's not all bad. But no sign of the WWF champion Bret Hart, and conspicuous by his absence is also Ric Flair, who is coincidentally on his way out of the company at this point. We will get an appearance by Flair in the following week's episode. Your thoughts?
Well, I mean, you hit the nail on the head with some of these Hall of Famers, right? And, you know, can you imagine if they had replaced Max Moon and Damian Demento with a Flair and a Bret Hart? Again, you know, you didn't have your tag champs. HBK was the IC champ, which, by the way, coming out to Sensational Sherry, it sounded like, right? The vocal track and the background there. This to me was the beginning of a new era that was more, you know, rock and roll, kind of letting the hair down, a more intimate setting. And it was, I think all the other weekly shows, Saturday morning, all that stuff started to kind of fall by the wayside pretty quickly. So this literally, set a footprint and the wheel in motion. I kind of think about the Buffalo Bills again, you know, my team. They're kind of like a wheel also, but it's a square wheel. So once it gets rolling, it doesn't go very far. This is the opposite, right? This was the fast track, and those dudes that headed this show off, they knew who their stars were, already established. They'd be wrestling for decades to come, and a pretty good start. I'd give the show, minus the commentary, you know, probably a strong 7.5. Compared to the Saturday morning fair, obviously, at the time, I thought it was a 10.
Well, okay, so if you're going to do the scale, let's do this. On a scale of, say, Barry Horowitz to El Matador Tito Santana to the Repo Man to Mr. Perfect all the way to Bret the Hitman Hart.
Oh, man.
Where do you rank this episode?
I'd say somewhere probably between the missing link and maybe a Greg the Hammer Valentine or a Junkyard Dog. Probably just above a Tito Santana.
Now, is that Tito Santana like WrestleMania 1 Tito Santana?
Right, that's old school. Oh, yeah. That's not to be confused with the Matador. It's pretty shocking. I mean, I could have gone with him wearing the mask back in the day. I always had this thing, right? Like, you always have that friend in wrestling that always has his favorite wrestler, right? And so I had this friend that was like, his favorite wrestler was Tito Santana. You know, mine was the Macho Man, right, when he first came out. And the greatest day ever probably in my life was when he took that, Macho took that belly-to-back suplex from the apron and dotted the forehead, right, when he had him in the little headlock, and dotted him in the head with that foreign object that he then snuck into the trunks and covered Tito Santana for 3, which I think was at like a house show or something, right? And they only showed a clip of it on like the Saturday morning superstars. I couldn't believe it. I was overjoyed. You know, Macho Man had the IC title, and I think Tito kind of faded into the tag team ranks and
Strike Force,
a Can-Am Connection, he wasn't, you know, Strike Force. And it was, you know, he was always one of those dudes that, I don't know, he never had any kind of discernible characteristic that at least appealed to me. But that's what I loved about WWE, right? They had so many of these outlandish characters that covered the whole spectrum. You know, you could always find somebody to that you connected with, you know, and that's part of the beauty of professional wrestling and the WWF, WWE in particular.
Tito was a good one to start off shows with in the mid-80s. I will say that I was at WrestleMania 3. I hate to date myself, but I walked out of the building with a purple Ariba Santana t-shirt that I still have to this day. So although he was not my favorite, I love Randy Savage, as do you. I think that, you know, at my young impressionable age, that t-shirt just spoke to me. And then, you know, fast forward a couple of years later, and he's this Matador gimmick. So when we get to future Matador matches, I will hold all of my Bobby Heenan comments that he had bottled up during WrestleMania 8 about, you know, him being the brother of Ariba McIntyre, who sang the national anthem at WrestleMania 8 and whatnot. I know we're a little far removed from that, talking about Monday Night Raw in 1993, but we can tie it all together, I promise. So one thing that I wanted to mention on this show that is just unbelievable to me when you look back at the 20-plus year history of Monday Night Raw is that Damian Demento holds the distinction of main eventing the very first episode of Monday Night Raw. And I believed that that deserved its own drop on our first episode of the Raw Retrospective. So I searched far and wide, and I was able to dig one up. So here we go.
Do not, I repeat, do not call me a jobber.
With that, we hope you enjoyed our debut broadcast. Brian, thanks for your time. Thank you for taking the time to listen, everyone. And remember, you can follow us on Twitter at MON Night War. That's at MON Night War. And also, go to MondayNightWar.com for the full experience that the Monday Night War podcast series has to offer. There you can connect with the show's Twitter and Facebook page, as well as subscribe to our RSS feed. The Monday Night War podcast series is available using any device, be it iPhone, iPad, Android smartphones, tablets, desktop computers, and laptops. Just plug the link to our feed into your preferred method of subscribing, downloading, and listening to podcasts. This will be a weekly series covering each episode of Monday Night Raw, and stick around for even more content as we bring you the Nitro Party and Displaced Wrestling Fan Recordings. This digital recording is property of MondayNightWar.com and cannot be reproduced or redistributed in any way. MondayNightWar.com, the Raw Retrospective, Nitro Party, and the Displaced Wrestling Fan Recordings are not affiliated in any way with WWE. Until next week, everyone, thanks for listening.